The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right. Deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And we are back. This is David Gao, Carla Dawson. We got Jose behind the board. And Carla, let me welcome you. You know, we always introduce you as the Monday Night Delight, as you are. But tonight, there's other reasons to celebrate Monday night. We've got a Monday night doubleheader. Two big games.
Yes, we do. And two of my boys going at it.
Well, you love your Raiders.
I love me some Raiders.
But they're going to have a tough matchup against the Rams tonight.
It's going to be tough, and this may not be their year, but hey, it's heading in the right direction. I'm feeling positive.
Well, we'll come back to that later, but your man Chucky, John Gruden, has taken some heat over the last 10 days with the trade of Khalil Mack, particularly when Mack looked so good yesterday playing for the Bears.
Yeah, I was shedding some tears watching that Bears-Packers game, but you know, there's some reasons. We'll dissect it later for sure.
All right, your other big guy,
Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold, the Trojan, former Trojan, lighting it up for the Jets. They're
youngest rookie to make a season debut. You know, the youngest since 1950.
Isn't that amazing to
He's
think?
He's 21 years and 97 days.
Well, I guess in the old days, players didn't come out early.
There were
more restrictions on that. So now he's out early, and to get on the field as he has so well, so quickly, is really impressive, and he has his Jets ahead 10-7 at the moment.
That's right. So pretty exciting.
So it'll be Jets-Lions, the first game up on Monday night, Rams-Raiders to follow, and the long winter is over. The NFL is back in gear. This is our first time together since there's been an NFL game on. Obviously, it started Thursday night with the Falcons-Eagles game, but it is fun to have some NFL and college ball
so
now
great
to watch on the weekends.
Double whammy. You're going to have to give us your thoughts on your boys, your Cowboys. I know that was a tough day for you yesterday.
Very rough start for the Cowboys. Boy, the offense just looked inept. We will dissect that later.
But it's only week one, so let's look at it that way, too.
Well, I know one thing I was going to note. As good as the Patriots looked yesterday beating the Texans, a team that we all came into the season with a lot of optimism, remember how the Patriots looked week one last year. They were lit up by the Chiefs, and everybody said the Patriots are done, the era's over, they don't have a good enough defense, and yet the Patriots found their way to the Super Bowl. So a lot can change after just a week one outcome.
This is overreacting Monday. That's what we do after week one.
That's what we do. All right. Well, you've got the boss and the gloss, and when we come back, we're going to take a quick look at that Astros-Red Sox series that just finished, a little MLB. And then, was Serena Williams on the right side?
Whew.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, over the weekend, it was an exceptional time for baseball. I mean, you had the Red Sox and the Astros playing at Fenway Park. These are two teams destined to meet in the playoffs, I believe. Red Sox on their way to probably a 100-win season, maybe even a 105-win season. Yet, they don't feel very confident in Boston. The bullpen has shown signs of weakness. Sale is not pitching right now. He's resting. David Price has just come back from his injury.
Yeah, and he looked lights out, though. Wow.
He came back from that time he got hit. And that's really the one glitch on him in the last 3 to 4 weeks. He looks like he's going to be a good – I mean, he's always been a good pitcher. The question is, how can he perform in the postseason? Chris Sale did not do well last year in the postseason. Astros lit him up. But after this weekend, when the Astros won their first two of the three, Boston was starting to see the whole thing unravel. All the doomsayers came back out. The noise, the chatter in Boston, the alarm bells went off. And then, of course, Mitch Moreland saved the day in the third game with that walk-off RBI, and the Red Sox were able to salvage one of three in Boston.
Well, and video replay saved the day for Boston, too. Let's talk about that in game three. You know that, honestly, I've watched that replay of Altuve coming into home.
Yep.
His hand was on that base, and you can absolutely see the catcher did not touch him. And how can you spend 3 minutes and 55 seconds reviewing the play up in the box and you don't have enough to overturn that? The call in the field was that he was out.
Right.
Reviewing it, there is no doubt in my mind or anybody's mind. An apology is not going to be okay. Sure, anything can switch a game, but that was in the seventh inning. That could have been the difference in the game right there. So to be in Boston and have that happen, why do you have review if you're not actually going to look at it and react on it?
And it is a league that's trying to accelerate the length of the game, right?
Four minutes almost.
They lost a lot of time waiting around for a decision same call didn't make any difference.
Right. It should have made a difference. Yep. That's the sad thing. And A.J. Hinch, a day later, is still fuming about it. And I don't blame him.
Right.
What I think was interesting to me about this whole series, though, so the Astros took it 2-1.
Yep.
Would have been nice to have a sweep, and it almost was. But I'm surprised at how well the Astros did, given the fact that Alex Cora is the manager in Boston and was the bench coach in Houston as they went through their World Series winning season.
He knows that team and that lineup.
He does. He knows their tendencies. He knows their idiosyncrasies. He knows everything about them. And, wow, the Astros were able to really – I was surprised by that. I was nervous about the weekend. But they really – I think the message it sent to Boston was, yes, y'all may have 10 games on us, but it's going to be ugly if we have to meet again. Because it's two formidable teams.
I think they're going to meet again. Talented. I think it's going to be very exciting. I mean, obviously the Indians, the Yankees, they're all going to say something about it. But I think we've got the Astros and the Red Sox headed for a collision course.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's shift gears. I really want to get to Serena Williams because it was an extraordinary week for the U.S. Open. U.S. Open women's finals usually never gets enough attention.
Especially when you have week two college football, week one NFL, and you're right in the heat of the baseball season.
Well, there was a lot of attention this time with Serena Williams. Woo! Walk us through the various escalation than what took place.
Well, you know, the bottom line is that basically in the U.S. Open final, Serena Williams at 38 years old, taking on Naomi Osaka, Japanese 20-year-old who lives in the New York area, who has been idolizing Serena forever. And when she won the semis, Naomi said, I want Serena. I mean, if you idolize the best and you want to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Sure.
So that was really great, and she got her wish. But Serena lost the finals and lost her mind, and we have to figure out, was she right or not? So she got 3 code violations, starting with the first one. Chair umpire Carlos Ramos did not like what he saw.
If he gives me a thumbs up, he's telling me to come on. We don't have any code, and I know you don't know that, and I understand why you may have thought that was coaching, but I'm telling you it's not. I don't cheat to win. I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know.
It was a coaching violation. I guess it was a thumbs up, and Serena's setting him straight. That is not coaching. I don't cheat to win. I'd rather lose.
Well, she handled that one pretty well because he's saying she's getting coaching from the stands. What's interesting about it is that her coach afterwards did admit, I did coach her from the stands. I don't know that she saw it, but let me say that every coach coaches
every coach does something. How do you not be how would you not if you're a coach? That's what you do. Send a signal, encourage them to rush the net. You've got to give them. This is what a coach wants to do. It's instinctive.
And what I got from all the aftermath of this is that he chose to single out Serena's coach for coaching from the stands when this should have been happening all along during mm-hmm. the entire U.S. Open or really probably any tennis tournament. So that's a sticking point. It happens all the time, apparently, and it's never called. But then she got another violation. She did a little smashing of her racket, and this violation, number two, ended up costing her a point to start the sixth game of the second set.
Osaka.
Serena will need a new frame. Smash that one. Back on serve.
Williams leads 3-2. Second set. Osaka by 1 set to love. Curve violation, racket abuse. Point penalty, Mrs. Williams.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that was clear. She smashed her racket. Point, you do get a point violation for that. That's happened before. What happened next is I think Serena accepted that one okay, but that was her second code violation.
Yep.
And at this point, she could not let go of the fact that he got in her head and was basically attacking her character, calling her a cheat. So she called him a thief for stealing a point from her. And it really got ugly.
I didn't get coaching. You need to make an announcement that I didn't get coaching. I don't cheat. I didn't get coaching. How can you say that? You owe me an apology. You owe me an apology. I have never cheated in my life. I have a daughter and I stand what's right for her and I've never cheated. You owe me an apology.
It's funny to hear that crowd. They obviously took her
side.
They
love her.
They love her.
She is beloved. And you know what? You're a 23-time grand champion, a Grand Slam champion, and you're being treated like this. And you know, the thing is, at this point, after the third violation, he took a game from her. And she wasn't going to win this match.
Right.
I hate to say it.
Right.
But it's unprecedented. It's unprecedented. And in a U.S. Open final or a final of any Grand Slam, never seen it before.
Well, it is funny to look back at the history of the game. I mean, when you go back to the old days with Ilie Nastase and John McEnroe, mm-hmm. they were breaking
Jimmy O'Connor
many rackets during the course of a game. The language was foul, in your face, lots of verbal abuse. It was so much more than what you just got out of her yesterday. It's really surprising to me that this was such a big deal.
And I think it's going to become a bigger deal. Now it's going to be, is it gender bias because she's a woman? Does race play into it? And what I think the chair umpire did, obviously he's an incredible chair umpire. He wouldn't be at a finals match. But this Carlos Ramos, he inserted himself in dramatic fashion into a major sporting event.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
Not the ideal. Tough day.
Not ideal.
But and you don't want to take anything away from the champion. I mean,
which is exactly
all about
what happened.
Serena yesterday, right? But there was a champion. Serena didn't win.
Right. And now I think there's always going to be an asterisk next to Naomi Osaka's win that point penalty, game penalty. It'll never be. It didn't benefit Naomi in the end either. Yes, she's a champion. She was booed and she's all. And it's not her fault. This is where Carlos Ramos took it away from the girls on the court.
All right. When we come back, we are going to get a chance to visit with Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. He is knowledgeable about all things college football and we'll get his insights on this week's games. In particular, I want to hear what he has to say about the way Murray is lighting it up at Oklahoma. Kyler Murray, he is on fire.
Missing Baker Mayfield now?
Well, I know who misses Baker Mayfield, and it's so fascinating. This is a guy who's got a future in baseball, yet doing very well on the football field as well. When we come back, it will be Jerry Palm from CBS Sports.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
At O'Reilly Auto Parts, you're guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts you need. Guaranteed low prices ensure you're always getting the best deal. In fact, O'Reilly's will match any local auto parts store's price on any like item. They have the parts you need at the prices you can be sure of. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices, every day. Well, joining us now on the Bet DSI Inside Line is Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. Jerry, welcome into the show.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing great. We've got Carla and David here, and we are fired up to talk some college sports with you. Now, I've teased that we're going to talk about Kyler Murray, who has really impressed me these first couple of weeks. How good is Kyler Murray? Is it the competition he's faced, or is he really going to be a star?
I think it's both. I mean, he's obviously a terrific athlete, and we've seen that. I mean, obviously the competition hasn't been maybe the best. You know, I don't know that it's been, you know, dreadful either. I mean, they're not playing, you know, they're playing Florida Atlantic, who's a favorite in Conference USA. They're playing, you know, UCLA, which is not really thought to be having a good year, but still a Pac-12 team and with some pretty good athletes on. And he's lighting things up, and now there's going to be maybe even more of a load on it, you know, with the injury to the running back. But, you know, he's a pretty good player, and I think that, you know, they're a pretty clear favorite, I think, in the Pac-12, maybe West Virginia. I don't know if West Virginia's got enough defense, though.
Well, against their opponent, UCLA, so Chip Kelly, of course, in classic Chip Kelly form, was hilarious that he's angry with Billy Beane for not giving Kyler Murray enough money to keep him out of college football, of course, which is a classic. Meanwhile, the A's are holding their breath that this kid doesn't get injured the way he's running all over the field. Looking at Chip Kelly, Jerry, is he going to be able to turn UCLA around, and will it happen this year?
Yeah, but it's not a quick fix.
Right.
You know, he's got a system that he likes. He's got to get guys in that can run it. You know, it's not like it's especially difficult to recruit to UCLA. So I just think it's a matter of time before he gets them, you know, pretty competitive once again.
We're talking to Jerry Palm of CBS Sports, all things college football today. So is there a team that no one's talking about that has impressed you thus far?
That nobody's talking about, huh?
Well, that's an exaggeration, but there are teams that are sort of the favorites. Everybody thinks, oh, they're going to end up in the college football playoff, Ohio State, Georgia, et cetera. But is there anybody you think is getting overlooked thus far?
Well, I don't know. I mean, is Stanford being overlooked?
I love that.
That's a team that I just... Yeah, Carla's happy, yes.
Yeah, I love that, Jerry. I think the same.
I, you know, obviously, San Diego State, you know, gave them some trouble in the first game, and they don't get too worked up about the first game, and San Diego State has a history of giving Pac-12 teams, Stanford in particular, trouble. But I thought they were pretty impressive against USC, and, you know, I don't know if they can beat Washington. Washington's still the favorite in that league, but, you know, you've got a guy like Bryce Love. If you can run the ball and play defense, you've got a chance against pretty much everybody.
No, I agree with you. I thought that Stanford, you know, handled USC beautifully. And let's keep in mind, Stanford punted 8 times in that game against the Trojans and still won by 14 points. My question is, what is going on at USC? Is this just an adjustment with a true freshman quarterback, or do they have some troubles that we don't know about yet?
Well, no, I mean, I think when you have a kid right out of high school like that, there is definitely going to be an adjustment. You get a game like Stanford, you know, for the second game on your schedule, that's not really doing them any favors. And USC, you know, it plays a typically difficult non-conference schedule anyway. So they get Texas this week on the road. They've got Notre Dame coming up at the end of the year. So there aren't really a whole lot of cakewalks on their schedule for the young man to get adjusted. So but I still think, you know, that's a team. I didn't pick them, but I think that's a team that can win the division still, and there's a long way to go yet.
Yeah, there is. It's just game one. And what do you think the weekend game is going to look like between Texas and USC? It looks like it's going to be a game of futility if you look at the first 2 weeks of the season, but anything can happen. What's going to happen this weekend in Austin?
Yeah, it could be epic. You know, two teams fight themselves as much as fighting the other team, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, quarterback concerns on both teams. You know, the USC doesn't have a question about who's going to play, but just a question of whether, you know, he's experienced enough to, you know, play in another difficult environment. And, you know, Texas, just, you know, their offense has just been kind of hit and miss. And, you know, it's been difficult for Tom Herman and Texas to get things really going the direction they want. You know, this was a year where they thought maybe they had some promise to start the year by losing to Maryland and really, you know, a game that wasn't, it did get competitive at the end, but it just felt like Maryland's game the whole way. I just don't, I like Texas at home, but this is a game that really might just be who executes best. I mean, commits the least mistakes, a few turnovers, dumb penalties, things like that. The kind of stuff where you're shooting yourself in the foot. If you don't beat yourself, especially in this game where you've got two teams that are kind of stuck with a little bit, not beating yourself is maybe the key.
We're talking to Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. Okay, I thought one of the best games this weekend was that A&M Clemson game. Really well played, hard fought game. Clemson came in and played two quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, a freshman, Kelly Bryant, a senior. How long are they going to stay with two quarterbacks? Do you see them picking one soon?
I think if one separates himself, then yeah. I think as long as you don't really have clear separation, you can win with two quarterbacks, but you've got to have distinct roles for each of those guys. You've got to have a third package of plays for each guy where you know that you're playing to their strengths. You can do it, but I think if you ever get to the point, where one has separated himself from the other, and it becomes a clear separation, then they'll go to just one.
One team that apparently will not be playing two quarterbacks now is Alabama. Tua is turning everybody's head. What's his ceiling? Is he worthy of the hype?
Well, he certainly seems to be worthy of the hype. I guess we're going to have to wait and see, when they play a better opponent. Of course, they may not have too many better opponents than the one he played in his very first game, coming back in the second half and leading Alabama to a national championship. But I think, he's very impressive. It was, I think, known that whichever quarterback won the job was going to be a Heisman candidate because their offense had a chance to be that good, and Tua certainly is not just, a mere contributor to that, but he's a spark that has an offense that's playing, really better than we're seeing Alabama seeing. Used to seeing from Alabama. It's more versatile, and I think more explosive than your typical Alabama offense.
And, Jerry, going back to the two quarterback system, I'm surprised with Clemson that they're using the two quarterbacks, because I watched the whole A&M game on Saturday, because I think I look back at Notre Dame when they had Malik Zaire and DeShone Kizer. It was a disaster. That was the same time when Texas was using both Erlinger and Bushell. And I just think for these quarterbacks, it's hard. How do you, when you're platooning like that, how do you prepare? How do you get yourself up and ready if you don't have a starter's mentality? I don't know. I'm surprised that Clemson is doing it, and do you think it's going to end up hurting them in the long run? And do you think they should just stick with someone and go?
The examples, though, that you gave, both Clemson quarterbacks are better than any of the other four that you mentioned.
True.
So it helps when you've got two guys that good, that you can run them in and out. And, if you prepare them, and you've got guys that are willing to be team players that accept their roles and know that you may not finish what you start, and that you've got these two guys backing each other up, emotionally, mentally, as well as physically, then you can do it. If you've got a lot of jealousy and bad attitudes, then it's not going to work. It only works if you've got guys with the right attitude, and obviously Dabo believes that in this case he does.
We're talking to Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. So do you want to give us your top three Heisman candidates after a couple of weeks in?
Well, it's kind of hard because not everybody's been really fully tested. But, two is on the list.
Yep.
The Wisconsin running back, Taylor, I would put him on the list. And let's see.
What about my man, Ed Oliver, here at University of Houston?
Yeah, I don't know that he can win the Heisman, but he might be, the kind of guy that's the first pick in the NFL draft. I mean, he's a fantastic player. And they light up Arizona this week. And I thought
my
Houston could
goodness.
Win, but, man, I didn't think they'd win by, 27?
Yeah, it was like 48. They won by like 30 points. It was something insane.
It was like 45-18 or something like that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 45-18.
Arizona's that's off it. To a really rough start under Kevin Sumlin.
Well, Oliver was in that backfield all night.
Oh, he was in on every play in that defense. I say run, don't walk to see that guy. He is exciting.
Oh,
I've never been so excited about it.
He's a fantastic player.
Yeah, he is.
That's a guy who, if he stays healthy, he's going to make a lot of money at the next level.
And Bryce Love's on your short list, Carla, for Heisman.
Bryce Love's on my short list, yeah.
He would be, just two games in, since he didn't have a good first game, I wouldn't put him in the top three. But you can't really rule him out after two games. I think, you know, there's plenty of time for, you know, anybody to make a move, including people we haven't even talked about.
Right, exactly. And I know Will Greer is getting a lot of talk, too, out of West Virginia. So we'll see. It's early.
All right, that's Jerry Palm of CBS.
I don't know that there's overwhelming favorite for the season, and I don't think 2 weeks in there's an overwhelming favorite.
Yep.
Which makes it exciting. I like it that way.
Jerry, thanks so much for joining us. That's Jerry Palm of CBS Sports coming in to talk a little college football. Really appreciate your coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
All of our guests are sponsored by BetDSI.com. BetDSI.com. Use promo code NATION25 and receive a free $25 wager today. Get all the plays and the inside line at BetDSI.com.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Say you are a little concerned. You're listening to these ads. I was not happy. They're playing ad about baldness solutions. That's a sensitive topic for me. And then they came back to Mental Bright to help your mental acuity. Are you concerned?
Yes, and there's a little Parkinson's in between.
You got none of that.
Like, where are the bikini ads and the, I don't know what else. What do you mean?
The young people ads, you mean?
Protein powder, whatever. Yeah, bring it on.
Yes. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Jose, can you just assure our listeners that we do not need Mental Bright nor balding help, right?
No, it's for them because they need that.
They need it. And in fact, Carla's sitting here in her bikini doing the show.
You know, it often happens here. It's warm in Houston. So.
Yes, it is. Well, I'll tell you, a guy who might need some Mental Bright was Ben Roethlisberger.
Whoa, yeah.
He stunk it up yesterday.
Yes, he did.
When he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's really off.
It is the tale of two Bens.
Really interesting that he struggled so much. Now, the Browns defense, I'm going to tell you, is going to come of age. Myles Garrett in that backfield, he's obviously a top talent. He was number one pick a couple years ago. They've got Denzel Ward in the secondary.
Great pick. I have to say, I wasn't sure about that. I loved it.
And somehow in Cleveland, we're celebrating a tie.
Okay, are you?
Yes.
Okay, I can't decide.
Throw your fists in the air and celebrate.
Well, they did snap their 17-game losing streak.
That's
so
huge.
There you go. But do you celebrate that or do you kick yourself? Because as a Cleveland Brown, your team forced 6 turnovers and you ended in a tie?
Well, if you actually go back and look at stats, I bet you it would be, you'd have to go way, way back for a team that got 6 turnovers and still lost. I mean, that is a bad day.
If you can find it. And then if you're Pittsburgh,
right?
Wait a minute. I was leading 21-7 going into the fourth quarter. What just happened?
Yep.
So both these teams, I think they got to go back to those locker rooms and scratch their heads and say, what? With Ben, though, with Ben Roethlisberger, we were talking about it. You mentioned, you alluded to it earlier. I just thought, wow, he is lacking in some serious pocket awareness.
Yep.
Like, what in his decision-making, I was confused by it yesterday. Wow, he made some throws that I was like,
But we've seen that before.
We have seen it before.
We've had him go through some tough stretches, and then somehow he puts it all together, and he can be extraordinary. He has a great receiving core as well.
Yes, he does.
He's lacking a running back right now, at least one named Bell.
Okay, do you think Le'Veon Bell, do you think that's the difference? James Conner did a nice job yesterday.
Yeah, no. I mean, they do pretty darn well without Bell. And in fact, I think Bell's going to lose this one. I don't see the Steelers caving into his demands. I think eventually Bell's just got to come back. I don't see there's any other way out of this one.
And do you think they need him back?
Well, I know they'd like to have him back. I mean, I know that they're a better team with him. I just don't think they're going to pay a lot of money for a running back whose best years may be behind him. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about Tyrod Taylor? He was a little inconsistent yesterday.
Yes.
So what does that mean for your boy Baker?
I guess I'm going to say Baker hits the field by week 4. I mean, Tyrod Taylor is clearly just a placeholder. It's a matter of when. And we're watching Sam Darnold light it up for the Jets. And Darnold, the what, number three pick overall, Baker Mayfield the number one pick overall.
With Saquon Barkley in between, that's a nice little 1-2-3.
I think there's going to be some pressure. If Tyrod Taylor doesn't light it up and really get things going,
The Darnold effect is going to bring in Mayfield.
Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a thought, well, it's time for Baker. These rookie quarterbacks can play.
Yeah, well, that's why you draft him up there.
Well, let's look at the Texans-Patriots game, because you have, speaking of rookie quarterbacks, really a guy in Deshaun Watson who's still a rookie. I mean, this is his second year in the league, but only his sixth game to start because of his injury last year. He did not look as sharp this week. He just didn't look as sharp. He didn't seem to have that rhythm, the groove that he had when he was so exceptional last year.
Okay, I have an answer for you.
Yes.
To me, this was his first preseason game. You know, he played a snap or two in each game. That's nothing. When you are coming back from an ACL injury and you've only had five starts from the previous season, this was really – and I don't fault the Texans. I see why they didn't play him. You can't afford an injury in the preseason. But there's some rest on there. I'm not worried about Deshaun long term, but what I saw yesterday, he was hesitant. The throws were just a tad late to his receivers, a little bit low. He's rusty, and this to me was, okay, this is his preseason game. And guess what? It's in Foxborough against Patriots.
Well, credit the Patriots. I think Belichick did a good job of containing Watson, didn't let him get out of the pocket, buy time, and allow receivers to run wild. So Belichick, of course, a great coach. He makes a lot of young quarterbacks look rusty or bad or ill-equipped. The other thing is, of course, Will Fuller, the receiver, wasn't playing for the Texans, and that really adds another dimension to that offense. He's the one who can stretch the field with the speed.
Because without Will Fuller, they easily double DeAndre Hopkins and don't have to worry about a second option, you know, for their receiving core, which is good for New England, not great for the Texans. But you know what I have to say is, with Deshaun Watson looking tentative and a bit rusty, and that will change. I know our defense, really, Houston's defense, not really kicking in until the second half. They lost by a touchdown.
Yeah.
A touchdown in Foxborough. I feel positive about that for Houston. If you're a Texans fan, there's a lot to go on.
Yeah. The glass half full is that they were competitive, and it was not a good showing really for the Texans defense in the first half. Where was the vaunted pass rush? Where was JJ? Where were Salas, Clowney? They really weren't putting a lot of pressure on Tom Brady. There was a stretch there where Brady had a ton of time to throw the ball.
And that's when you can get to Brady. When there's pressure on Tom Brady, that's when it's trouble. And that he had more pressure in the second half. But let's look at the biggest bright spot in Houston yesterday, which was the Honey Badger. Tyrann Mathieu, two interceptions, just the field general. Love his presence, love his energy, love his play. Wow, 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 wow. I'm excited.
Since I've been doing this with you, there were two guys who, when they came into the Texans, really lit you up. One was Deshaun Watson.
And he still does. I still have confidence.
The other is the Honey Badger.
Oh, my gosh. I'm fired up.
Yeah, he brings a spirit and an energy to that defense that's really contagious. He's exceptional.
And not only were there two interceptions, but it was on Tom Brady. Like, that's just go. And I think this is the first time he's played against Tom Brady, which is so exciting.
Yes, that's right.
So, boy, did he make the most of that. He went after the Honey Badger, went after that goat.
Other fun stat of that game, the youngest versus oldest. I mean, you have the biggest age spread between two starting quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, Watson on the young end, of course, Brady on the old end. Really fun to see that disparity.
No cliff for Tom Brady. 41's looking good on him.
Boy, he looked great.
Instead
when he has
Gronkowski.
Time to throw, as you said, when he gets in his rhythm, when he can set his feet, he picks defenses apart like no one else.
He did.
All right, a guy who did not pick anyone apart yesterday was the Cowboys offense.
Your
Dak
boys.
Prescott did not do anything. It was really a long, tough day for that Cowboys offense. They finally put up 8 points late in the second half. I don't really know whether to give the Panthers defense a ton of credit or the Cowboys offense a lot of discredit. I mean, both of them, I think, are relevant.
I do think they're both relevant.
Cowboys just never got in a rhythm. They always had a tough down and distance situation. They had stupid penalties that put them in a hole. Elliott couldn't get the running game going. They do have some injuries on the offensive line, but it was a long day for the Cowboys offense.
Do you think missing Dez and Dan Bailey has anything to do with this?
Well, Dak, Dez tweeting out. No, I don't think Dez was going to be the difference there. Interestingly, Cowboys receivers did seem to struggle getting some separation, but Dez has struggled to get separation. I mean, even before the game, you had Troy Aikman saying that the Dez Bryant of last year was not a big loss for that Cowboys offense. And look, if Dez had all the talent that he supposedly has, somebody would have signed him. I mean, he is struggling to find a team. Let's call it for what it is. The league has looked at him. The league has decided, most teams have decided, that the talent doesn't justify all the noise that comes with Dez Bryant.
But is it that the league has decided, or that he still views himself as an elite receiver, which I do think that he is? He wants to go to a team like Washington or the Patriots. I mean, not like. He wants to go to Washington or the Patriots because he sees that as his best fit. And the only interest that we know about, that I know about, is Baltimore and the Browns. And right, he wasn't interested in that. So is it because he's narrowed it down too much? And
well, the Redskins have said they don't need him or want him. Mm-hmm. And they're not long on receivers. Patriots aren't really long on receivers with Edelman out for a suspension. And yet no one's calling. So I think that's indicative. I just think that he's not the guy that he, in his own mind, believes himself to be.
But, and, you know, credit Norv Turner, too, the OC for Carolina. You know, last year was up and down for the Panthers. And he knows Cam is best when Cam is running like a madman. And he called those plays yesterday. He was running, which is great for Cam. But injury, you know, concerns, that's something.
Listen, found that was really interesting to me, because Norv Turner's offense is, well, there are patterns. You can see it mm-hmm. in certain teams. Mm-hmm. What Aikman used to do, that skinny post he used to run to Michael Irvin, Phillip Rivers used to do the same thing, but it was built on quarterback accuracy, and that is not what Cam Newton has. So I wondered, coming into the game, would Norv Turner impose his offense and his need for accuracy and a pass like the skinny post on Cam Newton? Because I don't think that would have been a fit. Mm-mm. What you really saw was...
You went to the strength of Newton.
Yeah, Turner adjusted his offense. He called plays to fit with Newton, and Newton ran the ball. The best offensive weapon the Panthers had in the first half was not Newton throwing, not even McCaffrey running. It was Cam Newton running the ball. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why Norv Turner is still in the league. He's great. He's great. Panthers are lucky to have him.
All right. Another quarterback turning everybody's head was none other than, well, Fitzmagic, I'm going to call him today. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Gosh, what the heck was
former
that?
Former Texan, former here, former Ram, Jets. Former everywhere. He is the ultimate journeyman, and yet he lit it up. He lit up the Saints defense, a defense that was markedly improved last year. It was impressive to me to see Ryan Fitzpatrick do so well against the Saints.
Well, the Saints have lost 5 consecutive season openers.
Yep.
So obviously they have a hard time getting out of the box. Right. And they were actually 0-2 last year to start the season, if you remember, and actually ended up with a fantastic season. So I don't know what's going on there with whatever trouble they have getting out of the box. But remember with Fitzpatrick, like, he really had a great season with the Jets when he took him to the playoffs.
Yes.
And he blew up in that first playoff game. I didn't think it was 3 interceptions against, was it Kansas City? I can't even remember. Consistency is not Fitzpatrick's friend. If you catch him on a good day, you're going to get what you saw yesterday. But what I think the most important thing that happened with that is that it's going to have Tampa Bay, the team, and their fans saying, do we really want Winston back?
Well, I don't.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah, no, I don't think Winston's really going to have a good NFL career. I'm afraid he's just a bust. I mean, given the trouble he gets into, all the off-the-field issues, and you might even overlook that if he'd performed well on the field, but sure, he hasn't done that well on the field. He's never had a game like Ryan Fitzpatrick just had. I mean, Fitzpatrick was 21 for 28 for 417 yards.
What in the world are those numbers?
Winston doesn't do that.
No.
And so if a journeyman guy can come and do it with the same team, it makes you wonder about Jameis Winston.
Yeah. And, you know, his immaturity in lack of that's going to be a factor for him. He does not control his emotions well. Remember eating the fingers in the huddle? I mean, that was the strangest.
Excuse me? Eating his own fingers?
You saw it. We watched it. It was.
We watched it over and over and over again.
And it didn't fire up the huddle. It confused the huddle. His own team members were looking like, is he freaking eating?
Well, it confused
his fingers?
Me. I thought you understood it, but no, maybe you didn't.
I'll never tell.
Please. All right. When we come back, we will take a quick look at that Vikings 49ers game. Apparently, Jimmy never lose. Garoppolo can, in fact, be beaten. Vikings 49ers, when we return, this is the Boss and the Gloss.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So I found that Vikings 49ers matchup so intriguing coming in because you had Kyle Shanahan, head coach of the 49ers, facing his old quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
Did he develop?
They were together at the Redskins. Yeah. He grew him up, right?
He grew his own creation.
And now there he is, Kirk Cousins, playing for the Vikings. And you have the 49ers lining up Jimmy Neverlose. I mean, they've done so well with Jimmy G. But Cousins and the Vikings come out on top.
Well, Jimmy G has now seen what it's like to face one of the best, if not the best, defense in the NFL.
Yep, very strong defense.
Wow, that's a wake-up call.
Yeah, the Panthers made Prescott look very human, mm-hmm. and, of course, the Vikings got the better of Jimmy G.
But, you know, Kyle Shanahan is a great coach. He's going to help him with the adjustments. But, yeah, this is big time.
In New England, they were celebrating the fact that Jimmy G actually lost the game.
Of course they were.
Some of that heat. It's just funny, the ripple effect, because it just wasn't that long ago. Jimmy G wasn't in San Francisco. Kirk Cousins was in Washington. And he had all those moving parts. And then Case Keenum went over to Denver. Case Keenum with the win. So the quarterbacks were all settling out, and Jimmy G was the one loser this week.
But you know what? Is he really a loser? Because he's getting $137 million over 5 years. So I think that's why a little bit of sour grapes maybe in New England, too. It's a big, fat contract.
Big, fat contract. You know, there was this rumor.
$74 million guaranteed.
I thought you told me that the reason Jimmy G finally lost the game was he went out with a porn star.
Kiara Mia.
That's just bad karma.
Mama Mia.
What's her name?
I think it's Kiara Mia.
That's nice to know.
Jose, is that right?
Jose knows all the porn stars.
Oh, don't act like you don't know.
Turn that laptop off in there.
I was impressed that you remembered, actually.
Well, you know,
Carla has
an
amazing recall of names and the ability to pronounce them. But look, Jimmy G never lost. Then he had a day with a porn star. Then he lost.
All I'm saying.
You make the conclusion.
That's right. Connect the dots.
It is what it is. All right. Great win, though, for the Vikings. A good opening win for them. Give them a lot of credit. And I think Kirk Cousins just wading into the options he's got when you think about all the resources around him and Murray and Cook in the backfield. Vikings are going to look good this year.
And Cousins is playing with all the monkey off his back, fully guaranteed $84 million contract.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.